Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
podcasts while walking. I'll sort of cover the most interesting aspect of this is covering the sort of spontaneous research as you encounter the Christchurch massacre. So I don't know what the date is today, but I think last Friday, today is Monday, last Friday, this Australian, 28-year-old Australian from Grafton, supposedly low socioeconomic, but will travel all around the world, purchased semi-automatic rifles, and with a liquid paper and a clear font, with care, inscribe them with the dates and times of previous massacres of Muslims. And it's killed with a death toll mounting up to around 50 people in New Zealand. And if you know about New Zealand's a sort of a cleaner, funner version of Australia. Smaller. It's sort of, I suppose, interesting to look at. So Australia's sort of like the United States of the Pacific, that our region, we're sort of the largest economy. We think we're the best, we're the loudest, the most arrogant. So I'll give a talk about that. And then perhaps some electronics to go to it, rather than a picnic mix. Sorry, I'm just getting a bit of breath, out of breath going up this hill. yeah, so the overall thing is I'm walking to this near village, which is, I'm just going to check that I am actually recording, there's nothing worse. Yeah, we're going up to this village, which is 2.5 kilometres up the road, and you can hear the noisy freeway beside me, and I won't walk along that because it's almost impossible to record, and this is for the obligatory blood test to check that you are bleeding between 2.5 to 3.5 times more than a normal person, which is rather for the price to pay for having a mechanical replacement in your heart. So I really, it's all psychological in terms of being your mind used to it, it's good. And of course, monitoring it, if you're good for 2 weeks in a row, you can extend it to once every 2 weeks. Then once every 2 weeks, you're bad, it's then back much shorter. And so what happened is that for some reason, I clocked up the amount of rat poison that you take. You take rat poison, which is an anticoagulant, and you've just got to get your poisoning exactly right. And I went over at 7 milligrams. So 7 milligrams is a fair amount. I've been in there with an elderly person. He's down to 1 milligram. So, and then there's it's like super heavy Afghanistan. Veteran I was speaking to, he was on 8.5, but I was on 6 to 6.5 every day, and going up to 7. Now, if it goes too high, your ears ring. I know that for sure, so it's all okay, and I can say that you're my predictability of my INR, which is called the ratio of how well you bleed. That's going to finish this off. I haven't yet worked out a way of predicting it. I can't see anything natural. At the same time, I've got to get body weight under control. And dare I say, it's half kilogram at a time affair. My basic diet is not eating anything. So, which takes a bit of discipline to get used to. So it's been making small progress. You get very small gains, small progress. So cutting out all sugary drinks has dropped me about a kilo. I'm about 10% overweight at the moment, and I was more, possibly 20%. Not really, yeah, about 20% overweight. And having out sugary drinks, a bit of willpower, and don't have a serve at breakfast, so down to a small dish bowl, so sort of give myself a bit extra of Special K. And for lunch, just had my lunch then, which was a nectarine. It was not necessarily good, that was sugary free. And then unfortunately dinner time, so I let myself go and eat a biggish dinner. But all that being said means that reducing weight and reducing what you do makes you tired and also a damn difficult person to do a blood test on, because your veins are much smaller. So this time I'm last time I went, it was absolutely blisteringly hot. This time I'm walking out, it's a cooler thing, but I'm going to actually put my drink on here, and I'll drink as I go and eat it. Now, what's been happening is that, I don't know, I have pushed myself onto doing podcasts and doing this mammoth podcast, 850 pages, it's more close to 700 actual red pages. The rest is unthinkable thickness of pages of acknowledgements and notes. Well, there's really well researched book on the sun, and yeah, ultimately I think it shows the tension between, to produce a single focused book, you need a single focused person. But the single focused person doesn't have, has only single focused expertise. So, like if I wrote it, I'd have difficulty writing anything interesting about politics, religion, music, opera, as he does. So he's really good, he's got his sense of knowledge, but the actual key explanations of the sun, the physics explanations of the sun, isn't there. But I'm launching into this, and sort of, heck, I don't really, can't really account for who will listen to anything like that. But the importance of reading from one end to the other, thick and just ploughing through it, and that's been a real effort reading. I mean, I read a book of platypuses, books on military history, and they've been really difficult to just sit through and read. So I'm just improving on it, and also improving the reading style and the continuity of speech. So that's what I've focused on. But in reading this, and this is relevant to the massacre, or the shooting of 50, I think 50, shooting 50 people in a mosque, so I think I'd call that the massacre. Trying to actually experience it. So reading this book, I've read various aspects to do with the Sun and Muslim religion, and various things that when you plough through it in a book and read it very slowly and carefully, there are things that there's probably two aspects of it. One is that things that I can do well, or improvement, I think are sort of fluke or circumstances. I don't think it's to me. I've just recently spoken with a psychologist who's actually studying it. It's called the imposter effect. That is where sort of the opposite of big ego, of overstating your ability, you, for various reasons, understate it or physically believe it. And so I suppose someone who really suffers from the imposter effect can't tell it. So I don't know whether I've got the imposter effect, but that's also a likelihood. So this puts you at a different starting point for facts, that when you read it, you believe that you have not understood it properly, therefore check it out. And you're prepared to dismiss and discount what you believe very quickly, because you're not all that good. You're prone to bias and that type of stuff, which is sort of the fundamental thing of a researcher, is that you're researching two things. You've got one eye on the information, another eye on exploring your own biases and trying to work out what they mean. You can't eliminate them, but you can direct them, get on top of them. And so I don't know whether that means that all researchers suffer from, or good researchers suffer from, imposter effect. So on two ledges, so if you take Muslims on one end and ultra-right on the other, this process is... I'm just getting a bit out of breath. We'll get into quieter realms soon. So on one ledger, it's about Muslims, and I'm sort of interested in them in that terms of how the Saracen raids up into the late Byzantine Empire catalyzed the whole sequence of events, which one sequence led to really trying to think of it, Nicholas de Casa, the Cusa. All these people, it led sort of like a secondary effect. So the first effect was to sort of build the church and Western civilization, really based on artful fraud, which is like the donation of Constantine, and finding all these documents, and basically if they wanted something, they would find their interpretation to go forward. It's sort of like a crazy thing, and they felt really threatened by the Saracens and stuff like that coming up for raids. The Byzantine Empire couldn't protect them, and so they began to court the Frankish people, and the Frankish people, they had to negotiate with Charlemagne and Charlemagne's father, the donation of Constantine, which is fraudulent. And the issue to me, I don't care if it's all fraudulent or not, and a series of things that I think the Germans were wise enough to question things and to open it up. At one stage they believed it, and sort of really complex things, whereas the British, the English people were able to accept it, hold its bolus, and it allowed sort of a pincer movement on the Germans from the south and the north, of ideological pincer movement, which they were Christianized. But the interaction of the Germans and the Saracens and the stuff like that led to the modern frauds, and then trying to work your way back through modern frauds, or those, I suppose, 18th century frauds, led to the foundations of science. So, you know, sort of not without judgment at saying that, look, if you look at this, you can see the foundations of science, mass and other concepts come forward. And I must admit, look, I'm beginning to unravel this. I don't think I by any means a expert. And so you get your first reading of the Muslim stuff, and then another reading you go through, and you start to see some incredible things, like the Muslim religion and the moon. But the moon is an indisputable calendar, and at the time of Muhammad, there was war by calendar. So it's sort of like the fighting bell would go, and your tribes could attack each other. And what was unfortunate is that people would have this sort of shaky view of the calendar, and that here, you know, someone would be standing there waiting for their bell, and the opposition's bell would go early. So Muhammad, according to this book, Muhammad came in and gave a fairly prescriptive thing of where you could work out what to do via the phases of the moon. This is sort of like a universal time to come in. Of course, it did sort of propel the Muslims or the Islamic people to look towards, sort of threw them into science and intellectual activity in order to so their operating system required acquisition of knowledge. So that's an interesting aspect of it. And then little by little picking up the unknown view that Muhammad got poisoned. And you read it in one book, and you haven't read it anywhere else. You've read it in one book, and then you get the full story of Muhammad, the various things of being exiled, and late in life get start to build the picture, which the average person is ignorant of. And that he took a Jewish city and a Jewish woman who is rather single-mouthed and minded, decided to poison him, and asked what was his favourite dish. He absolutely loved shoulder of pork, well, that's not true, shoulder of lamb, and she poisoned it, and it took him 2 years to die. Now, I don't know whether this is true, so I have, at this stage, read it in a book, then read it through a few other sources, so I'm yet to upgrade this, but I'm in the process of taking this information. Now, I think one of the ingredients is a self-deprecation, sort of like you remove yourself out of it, and you're trying to find biases in yourself, biases in the literature, biases in the group, and actually migrate through forward. And this is significant, obviously, in terms of this methodology of looking for biases is there. But then you come across sort of that sort of explains, you know, why astronomy was good, why maths was good, because Muhammad, the prophet, left essentially mathematical astronomical riddles to sink, to be forms of a global sink to go through forward. And then you have these other things as you read and check, that in Mecca, the central place of worship is called the Kaaba, which means cube. And you're going, hang on. And inside the cube is the black stone, and the black stone is slowly the most sacred part, and this is something that God left over. So it's sort of like almost an Aboriginal legend, and trying to work out what material it is. It's probably obsidian from a volcano, and you start to understand this more by looking at the geography of the system. So you can imagine that people have said, look, I know everything, or I know someone who knows everything, so that's good enough for me. It's sort of like it was a discovery for me that there's a string of volcanoes in the Red Sea off the Gulf, because it's a rift plate, and as the Earth's crust is pulling apart, you get these volcanoes. You get obsidian, glass, black glass, and this is pre-Islamic. It used to be meteorite and rock worship. And this, as a Christian religion, has subsumed other things to sort of bulk it up. This is also subsumed and brought up. So this is from very ancient times, rock worship. And this is a central place of Mecca. That is, you have to circle the cube, and inside the cube, in a corner, is the black rock. Now, this is all if this is said by someone who is, I suppose, unkind and not sensitized to their biases, or the biases of others and the biases of the system, it's can be used as a force. If you can imagine these theories of thoughts, they can be at rest and you can just move quiet amongst them. But if you're mounting a break-in, you sort of push people's thoughts over and push them on top of each other. And so I want to actually do understand this. Now, just as a tip point, another point, so there was geographic orientation of people. You pray towards Mecca, how you find where Mecca is exactly. So I'm just going to start drinking heavily, not alcohol, but water. I don't think it's going to really help all that much. Partly because this bottle is stupid. It's got a, if you drink water in, it's got a suction, it's got a thick wall, so you create a vacuum, you can hardly get any water out of it. At any rate, there's this, attitude of aggression, conceptual aggression, which means that you can't actually progressively migrate through someone's beliefs and find important, less important. You can't actually see how their beliefs are structured because you're attacking them. They all congeal and they're all formed like a fortress in case you can't get anywhere because people feel under attack, which is one point there. And so this is, I'll keep the watch out, and for more authoritative people, I've got more on the Black Stone and more on Muhammad's death, and it's sort of very interesting to look at the deaths of various leaders and how they are perceived, and various things like that. So for me, I found it interesting that just a tidbit of information that Aristotle's sponsor, when in his early career, when he was on an island, the island got taken over by the Persians, and the sponsor, this is 300 BC, got crucified. And the idea, even from ancient times, of crucifying a leader and ensuring that the people around them can't help that dying person. I see in corporate space, this happens all the time, that a new new admin comes along, and the people who were key in their culture get mistreated, and the people around them have to not help them. And this not helping is quite devastating for the, it's quite destructive, and it is destructive because the aim is destruction. You want to destroy what's there, culturally destroy. And I think this is really, really inbred. So you've got the death of people, and of course, that's got a formula, and of course the Christians have sort of rejigged that formula such that it's no longer useful. So that ultimately, that formula of destruction became a religion in itself. It's sort of interesting on that line. And then the next research into Muslims are the five, what are they called? Not cults, five sects, the Sunni, the Shiite. So, and the Sunni and Shiite is there to do with the succession of Muhammad. So one's in the family, one's, I think the Shiites, 12, there'll be precisely 12 people, and that requires a lot of recounting, and sort of a slight shift. Sunni and Shiite is 5 and 3 times a day, whereas they're both 5 times a day, but the Shiites have compressed, I think the Shiites, or they've compressed 2 into 1. So even the first prayer services. So these are all interesting facts. Then there's a sect purely, is it Yemen? No, there's another section of Saudi Arabia with its own sect, okay, which is none of them. I just wasn't Yemen, Oman, probably Oman. This is really hard for me because the information is not in my physical memory, that is recall memory. It's just floating in. I'm speaking as it's been pumped across. So I don't know if you look like you normally remember things. It's just pumping across and coming out. That's 3. There's a fourth one, which is in Pakistan, which is sort of, it's hard to say what it's like. It sounds a bit like American evangelistic type of thing, but a very peace-oriented one. There was a fifth one, which was a blood-curdling terrorist one, but then that got abandoned and died out. 1880 at the most, it died out. And then what people have said is that the IS is like this state, but this sect no longer exists. So it's like a resurrection of an extinct sect, and it's a fair cop. If the Muslim world has already extinguished what they've already managed this before, they can surely manage it again. It's sort of like like we've had the Crusades, but there's been a whole series of Knights of Templar and all power thing, and that's gone over. Surely we can put on. Now, the other, I suppose, interesting thing is reading this aside is Cardinal Ratzinger, who is Pope John Paul, whatever he is, who's retired. And reading some of his edicts to do with the sun and the orientation of churches and sun worship, he was just clearly what would be in modern terms a liability nutcase. Just, but you know, just reading it across now, again, one gains nothing from walking around and bullying and pushing. If you've got nothing to win, you don't have the conversation, and there's sort of a, the only things in town is, if there's bullying in terms of the people's thoughts, that's the only act in town, and so people are defensive, so you can't just have an open conversation with people and say, oh, can you account for this person's statements? He was, I mean, that's, you know, was saying things about the sun, but also the orientation of the church, you know, that the church should be facing towards the rising sun. It's also interesting that Asia, where Asia is Sanskrit for dawn. And so these are the people in Asia are people who live in the dawn. So it's a rather rather like that from the West. So sort of an interesting aspect to it. So you've got all this, and then it comes along to the sun as being a fallback religion for if people don't like what Christianity is saying in terms of its message. I want a much more primeval one which I can mould. And so they had Schopenhauer saying that the sun is like rationalism, but the black sun, right, I have to say, the black sun is irrational method of thinking, which I can sort of see, because when you look at why people do things, the motivation is actually quite sinister. Like when you strip it, if you say, all right, this is what you've told me, but what's likely to happen is that you're doing this for completely the wrong sinister reasons. And they can't really, I would, you know, obviously don't say that to them. But that's embodied in Schopenhauer. And then this went into the work of Friedrich Nietzsche and Wagner, Tristan and Isolde, the light, dark, and shadow, and all that type of stuff. So let's see if I can take another drink here, because I've got to really swell myself up. I'm going to have to drink like anything when I finally get into that. Blood test shop. Okay, so we've got all of that coming forth. Now, I'm going across that here. I'm going to run over. I nearly did. This one's not going to stop at all. And Mirage, that's the name of this car. Is that the, it's sort of an older grey car. Okay, so going forward is that solar imagery was a reboot, and the black sun is really important, and it's a piece of information you want to check out is SS stands for Schwarz Sun, and the entire methodology of these people in thinking, even though it was subversive and across, is very much this walking an intellectual landscape, start keying down doors and make everything defensive, and you say, look, everyone's closed the door. When I shout in the middle of the street, everyone closes the door and they don't negotiate or mould their way forward. And, so it was very much this style of thinking, which I guess I began to recognise as, like when I encounter people, discussions, I see that, although they say they themselves are not offended, but the topic of conversation is taboo because other people can use it, and so your discussions about the varieties of Islam, the death of Muhammad, the structure within society, you're not putting forward, you're saying, well, it's my understanding at the moment. People's response is to A, discount it, because their view of an intellectual person in a intellectual baseball-based society is someone who would come up and absolutely smash the living daylights out of anyone who disagrees with them and create this affront and create a a landscape of fear that can never get through. And this is really, I think we're on post-World War II, this style of thinking. I'm sure my style of thinking would not make sense pre-World War II. You had to be on one side or the other and race the entire idea of race then. So Schwarz means black. Sun, something to do, is the German for black sun. Now, where his logic for it is in the story and the swastika is to do with solar imagery, and it's been adopted many places throughout the world, and having different connotations of bright, and the flipping over is the black sun. Now, a lot of these theories, when you read on academic articles about them, don't hold up. Some absolutely do hold up. So, or one is that Hitler had syphilis, and you read the scientific article, although he had, four of the six essential attributes necessary for it, he didn't have them all, and the balance of probability, i.e. no, he didn't. But on the other side, there's the iconography of Hitler with this picture of Friedrich the Gay. And this just sounds like a bizarre theory that he would actually have conversations with this painting. And there's a painting of Frederick the Great he would take with him in his Junkers aircraft. And the thought of the... And this is hard to believe. However, his Telephonus, who died in 2011, was an SS hero because he got shot when walking back from the Polish. He was having a negotiation with the Poles. He got shot, injured, and he had a job as Telephonus there. And said, "Oh, Hitler was always polite. I never saw any of these rages." And he described in detail of it, and he said in the act he rolled up the painting and put it in his backpack, and that was the last thing to leave the bunker. And so some of these things are fantastical, some of them true, but this black sun, you don't think, I'll have to read Schopenhauer, I have read Friedrich Nietzsche, and it is sort of a bit painful. And Friedrich Nietzsche is someone who definitely did have syphilis, along with Van Gogh, I think. But there's a whole lot of people have said have it, but don't. So Friedrich Nietzsche was eventually losing his mind. Now, losing your mind is not necessarily the worst thing. Say I have worked through bits of stroke. It's just if you add other mental diseases, and one of the things I have very much seen is that mental disease is not just an individual, it's a whole organization can have a mental disease, and in that mental disease organization, mental psychiatric problems don't stand out. As if you were, this is a general thing. So I think a lot of people have psychiatric problems, and going forward. Now, that all this goes up to suddenly up. So for me, it's really interesting in that people practice the art of not thinking about something before an event, and then they look for communal authorization to think. And so I've been out on my own researching Islam without an author, without a catalyzing event, and when I speak to people, I don't think they're addressing an argument. They're just questioning my authority to think. So what is interesting is that I've researched this well before the massacre, and then it just gives you a different quality of thought in terms of and now what happens is that you say, oh, I've read about the Black Sun, this person had the Black Sun picture, and it's a neo-Nazi symbol, and he presented things in this particular way, which is sort of a and it's interesting that his 87 pages are of Mein Kampf. It was similar to Mein Kampf, this tirade of sequentially, locally, logic things in something which is locally, logically, globally scrambled, which is essentially this event-based thinking. So his event-based thinking is that he wrote all these events on his magazine cartridges in liquid paper. And this consequence of event-based thinking is that he was going to create an event. Now, so that's what he was trying to do. He was trying to create an event. He's in event-style thinking. And people have different styles of thinking. I think educational people think in terms of ceremonies. I'll have so many ceremonies during the year, get people acclimatized to the ceremony, then I'll have a final ceremony, and I will complete it, and you'll have a certificate. So that's the ceremony. But if you look at all the events, he's written it. Now, we can actually see that because I can read it, but as for the other massacres in Paris, it's very hard to see how that's within inside an organisational cell. There's groups of people organised, there's coordination, there's a clash of power going here. There's a power against them, and sort of the anti-terrorism situation is almost some that into being by actually shaping, by going forward. You are stamping out most things, but you are shaping that forward thing to penetrate forward, which is all the fundamental aspects of it. And it's sort of artfully, wrongfully the process. But this is a slightly different view in terms of there's no power conflict here. This person has just taken the logical, and it's a low level of understanding, and you have to understand that people who are not educated or don't want to be educated think in terms of events. What does the law say? So the law is an event which has come through. What would the authorities have? What would be the likely event of this? Rather than actually this more open view. So I think that'll cut it for this stage. We've heard a little bit about we're going to blood test. Now, a little bit about podcasting. Now, the entire idea of podcasting is that whereas people handling me are looking for certificates and paperwork, I'm looking for umbrellas as their events. I'm focusing on the process. And the process opens these things up. So the process gets your health right, gets the projects up and running, get everything into going. And sort of a process is one of these, is sort of a similar to the event. So you have processes, which are concepts I'm doing, which leads, if you've got intellectual curiosity or integrity, questioning all these things to go, to going forward. I'm coming up to a busy section here. They've got looking to pop into the pharmacy, and they've got elections in full flight here. So I have to shut up now. I think you've got the overall idea. This combination of looking where this comes from. So this is trying to turn the clock back on organized religion and replace it with an event style thing which creates an event. So I think this is a bit of an outlier. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.